Hello and welcome to your moment of who. This is Casey.
This is Sue.
And in this episode, we are discussing the episodes Kill the Moon, Mummy on the Orient Express, and Flatline. So, do we have any emails we need to address up front right now, or should we wait until the end of the episode?
That's what do you want to do about that? Pretty good idea. Let's deal with the ones about previous episodes first. There was a conversation. Here's the thing. Earlier, a couple months or so ago, we were getting a lot of spam into the email account, and that was linked to my email account, so I was getting all these spam messages to my phone. So before DragonCon, I cleaned up the Anomaly Supplemental inbox, and I unlinked my email from the Anomaly email, and then I forgot that I unlinked them. So... So I went and I checked on the email a little while back, and we had email. Oops. There was actually a conversation that Jen was having with a listener named Mike, who about actually our Jurassic Park episode. I guess the email he sent originally, he sent to Girly Geeks and not More Girly Geeks. But they also talked a little bit about Doctor Who, and he said that his daughter and our podcasting, it was helping to get him into Doctor Who. So yay, that's awesome, Mike. Thank you, and I'm sorry it took so long to actually mention your email from August 28th.
And I apologize for all my swearing. Oops.
And then we got another email from Tish, and I'm just going to read that one.
I'm going to laugh at it.
I don't know why you love it so much, because you hated the Christmas special as much as I did.
But it's just so funny. You read, and I'm just going to react appropriately.
So I was listening to your most recent moment of who this morning. FYI, this came in September 12th. Again, I forgot about our email account. And I think you're wrong about the timeline with Eleven's goodbye to Clara. First, he gets his next regenerations when he's old and up on the platform when he takes out the flying Daleks with the regeneration energy. Then he goes back to the TARDIS. It's at this point that he calls Clara from the phone on the front of the box. He has already been, quote, reset to young version of himself at this point, which is what we see of him in the Deep Breath episode. So he's already starting the regeneration, and therefore he can know that it is likely to be a whopper. It is after this phone conversation that Clara shows up at the TARDIS, in the time of the Doctor, sees the phone hanging there, hangs it up, and comes in to find the young Eleven, who then says goodbye to Amy. I guess he didn't need to say goodbye to Clara at that point since he had already done it via phone call. We just didn't know it at the time. Anyway, I enjoyed the goodbye, and I think that it fit the story arc for Clara. She was very hesitant with the new Doctor, and I think this helped her with the transition better than anything else could have. I also liked that it did finalize the flirting with the Doctor stuff. I mean, even 12 said it was her boyfriend calling. I don't think it took anything away from Peter Capaldi. If anything, I feel like it gave him more. He wasn't just asking Clara if she would accept him, he was asking the audience, and how could anybody help but say, of course. Anyway, that's just my two cents. I actually had to push pause and yell at you while driving to work about the timeline issue.
Okay, Tish, I just want to recall that I liked the goodbye, but I think we were a little messed up on the timeline.
I'm going to be 100% honest, and I only watched The Time of the Doctor once because I hated it. In my mind, he's got old age makeup on during the phone call. I could be completely wrong. This timeline does make a lot more sense, but I still don't like the phone call.
That's fine.
I would go back and watch it, but I don't want to watch that episode again. So I will accept this timeline, no problem. But I don't know why this is hilarious to you.
It just did. And also, I'm just picturing Tish. I don't even know what you look like. Pulling over on the side of the road, pushing pause, and like yelling at us.
I think you mean at me. But...
I just have this image of my mind because I've done this before. Like, no, you're wrong.
That's what it is. It's because we've both been there. But yeah, I can accept this timeline. I'm okay with this. I still find it belittling, I guess, that Clara didn't get a goodbye when she thought it was going to be a goodbye. Like, think of it from her perspective. He's mm-hmm. hallucinating Amy, and Clara doesn't get a goodbye, even though she is the one who is actually physically there. Yeah. And I feel, maybe not in terms of disrespectful to the doctor that the 11th doctor calls and the 12th doctor is there, but it's disrespectful, in my opinion, to the actor. It's disrespectful of Stephen Moffat and Matt Smith to Peter Capaldi. And that's what makes me so uneasy about it.
I don't know. I mean, you can argue any which way about it. I mean, my main concern was with Clara because, you know, she's supposed to be the audience's eyes. And the time of the Doctor was supposed to be that first episode where she could be. And she was negated to focus back on Amy, who had already left. And, you know, we get it. We get that Amy is the favorite of Stephen Moffat's companions. We get it. I'm over it. I love Karen Gillan, but I'm over it. But I liked the goodbye in Deep Breath, Tish. I liked it. I thought it was fine.
And it's just proof that we can continue to disagree.
Indeed. But not on the important things.
Shall we go forward?
Yeah, let's go ahead and go forward.
We have spoilers.
What?
These books are from your future. You don't want to read ahead, spoil all the surprises. Not peeking at the end.
Isn't travelling with you one big spoiler?
I try to keep you away from major plot developments. Which, to be honest, I seem to be very bad at.
So, Kill the Moon is an episode.
Where do you want to start?
Well, first of all, remember back in the day when everyone was special to the Doctor?
Ugh.
It's just like, everyone is special to the universe. The human race is so important. Look at you guys. Look at you guys thriving. And now we're kind of back to 9, where he thought everyone, he thought of humans as apes, except it's even worse. And he goes so far as to call a 15-year-old girl not special. And that pissed me off. And then he was like, you really want to be special? How do you feel about being the first girl on the moon? And it's like, how about you just tell me I'm special instead of making me prove to you?
And she's trying so hard to prove it, and he's just not interested.
Yeah. So should we just get to the main point of the episode, which is that the moon is an egg now?
Yeah, I'm just going to say it, and people can hate me if they want to. If you do not think that this is a debate about abortion, you are not paying attention.
It was pretty strong in the controversy thing. So, first of all, I'm really frustrated by the idea that the Doctor has been to the beginning of the universe how many times just to kind of watch it for fun? He took Donna there back in The Runaway Bride, and you saw the formation of the f***ing moon. And it's a moon. It's not an egg. And all of a sudden, it's like, you know, it's cracking and it shells and it has creepy germ spiders just kind of going about everywhere and attacking people. And it's like amniotic fluid. And Neil deGrasse Tyson, if he had seen that episode, he would just be raging. He would be raging inside and asking why we are encouraging writers to do this to our poor children who are already being put through awful, awful science programs in school. And then you enter into this debate where it's, oh, should we let this innocent baby live or die? And there's no, the mother is not involved in this at all because there is no mother. And it's like, what's more important, the lives of everybody in mankind? Or is it this moon egg, this innocent life? And it's like, what's going on? And I, what? Why are you having this debate on Doctor Who? Why? I mean, yes, I understand that we should have philosophical debates in fiction. However, don't have a debate about something that you don't fully understand. I'm going to take a sip of wine.
I know it's like the least important part of your little rant, but Neil deGrasse Tyson's daughter is actually a Whovian.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible that he did see this episode, but I haven't seen him comment on it anywhere. However, Phil Plate, also known as the Bad Astronomer, wrote an article for Slate about how terrible all the science was in this episode.
Yay! Thank you, Phil Plate.
I don't even know where to go. So as soon as the doctor said that the moon was gaining weight, I knew what it was. As soon as it happened, beginning of the episode, I said, oh, the moon's an egg. I thought it was maybe like the spiders were what was hatching from the egg, but whatever. So that happened. Not that that explanation for the moon gaining that much weight. Well, I keep saying weight. I should say mass. The moon getting that much mass in comparison to its existing mass is really wouldn't be that noticeable. It's not that much. Mm-hmm. But the science that kept bothering me on this, just the science, were the phases of the moon. Because one second they would show the view of Earth, and they would see it like half in the light, half in the dark. And then the next second, the Earth was completely dark out their viewpoint. And then when they're back on Earth looking at the moon, it's daylight, but there's a full moon. If it's a full moon one night, it's a full moon everywhere. The phase of the moon does not change in a night. No matter where you are, you're going to see it. And if, in order for there to be a full moon, the moon and the sun have to be on opposite sides of the Earth. So you can't have a full moon during the day, like at the end of the episode. That's not a thing. So it was that kind of stuff that was making me a little bit crazy.
I agree with you on anything and everything you say. I don't know.
And science fiction is supposed to ask the hard questions, right?
It is.
It's supposed to. It's not supposed to answer them for you.
I agree. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
And that's what this episode does, right? So Clara and Courtney and the astronaut, whose name I don't remember, decide to ask the Earth. That in itself is like a classist issue because we're only ever seeing Europe and America vote. And again, because they're voting with electricity, only the parts of the world that have a lot of access to electricity are actually getting a vote. So mm-hmm. basically, your rich countries get to decide. But so that's another issue. But they vote, and they vote overwhelmingly to blow up the moon. Which scientifically, again, would cause its own problems, like with debris and whatever. And the moon would still not exist, causing right. whatever tidal issues it has. Right? But so they ask, quote, all of humanity, which is not all of humanity, that votes no. And then Clara ignores it to make her own choice. And then later, both Clara and the doctor refer to it as the right choice. So they are asking the difficult question and then telling you which answer is quote-unquote the right one. And I'm not going to say it was the wrong one, and I'm not going to pick sides in politics. I am just angry that any choice in this situation was considered the right choice.
Yeah, I don't like going into politics on this show, although it's hard not to discuss my viewpoints when an episode angers me so much, especially when it hits so close to a topic that my state is currently having big issues with. Mm. I want sci-fi to ask the philosophical and the hard questions, but at the same time, just do it in the right way, you know?
It's just, for me, it's don't give an answer. ask the question, but don't give an answer. The whole point is to make your audience think.
Which is, you know, one thing, but also maybe be aware of canon and also use the right science. I'm just saying. Why did it have to be the Earth's moon? I mean, I would still be angry at the whole controversy debate that that writer probably wanted to bring up, but at least it wouldn't have been bad science. It would have been science fiction fantasy science.
There is a whole lot of bad science. I'm just going to link to the Phil Plait article in the show notes.
Please do. I want to read it.
I mean, yeah, you can hand wave it, I guess, if you really want to. But there are even, like, discrepancies among what they say in the episode. And, again, another thing that annoys me is just like the dinosaur in Deep Breath, and, you know, communism, the spiders are a total red herring. Like,
you referenced Clue. I love you.
But, I mean, that's what's in all of the promos are these, like, terrifying spiders. And they don't matter. They're not important to this episode.
Unlike the spiders. Why were they there? Why were they there if it turned out? Okay, actually, you know how this is supposed to be a first reaction thing. I did get curious. And I read one little bit of a Wikipedia article. And apparently, Stephen Moffat said something along the lines of Hinchcliffe, this script, which was basically, apparently the guy Hinchcliffe was one of the writers of Doctor who made the first half really, really freaking scary. And then the latter half was, you know, like a philosophical thing. And this is what that writer did. And I don't like spiders. I don't like the moon spider germs. And I believe I quoted to you what I frequently said at the screen was, no, 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 I don't want it. Why? No, no. Except said with more like crying. If they weren't necessary, they shouldn't be here.
So yeah, I mean, okay. Science, debate. But then another thing is that Clara can help save the Doctor's entire planet, but he suddenly doesn't give a crap about what happens to Earth. It's not my planet. It's not my moon. I don't care.
That was so out of left field. In past seasons where he said, this planet is protected. This planet is defended. And even, we're going to get to Flatline in a second, but in Flatline, he says it's protected. And in this episode, he says, you know what? This isn't my planet. You get to make this decision. Have fun, ladies.
And then explains it by saying he knew she'd make the right decision. All right, before we just go even further down the rabbit hole of being frustrated with this, what are the good parts?
Jenna Coleman. Jenna Coleman was the good part. Her performance.
Well, and Clara's little blow-up at him at the end was, I think, what a lot of us had been waiting for.
Yes. Yes, I will say that it was a little Mummy on the Orient Express, kind of took that away a little bit. Yes.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. We'll get to that. The blow up was probably, this is going to sound weird, for an episode that I really, really disliked, I feel like it was probably the best scene from this series so far. Because I needed that moment so much after all the shit Clara has been through.
Yeah, no, that was an important scene. And it's not, I've seen some people react to it and, like, not understanding or getting upset with Clara for having that reaction or trying to defend the Doctor. But let's not kid ourselves. That scene is about someone you supposedly trust, who's there for you and who you've helped, completely abandoning you.
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. Not the Doctor I know.
That's not the Doctor that I came to love. I don't know, man. This episode has gotten a lot of polarizing reviews, which was either you hated it or you consider it one of the best, apparently. And I disagree with the people who think it's the best, obviously. But I do think that the end scene with Clara putting her foot down was the best scene of the series. I hate this episode so much, but I'm going to give it that. The Tumblr jokes were also a little fun. I don't know how necessary they were, but they were fun. I enjoyed them.
That was cute.
That was cute. My granny used to put things on Tumblr.
I mean, really quickly, it was also nice to hear that the president of the United States was a woman.
Amen.
2049.
Mm-hmm.
Special effects were good.
Why was the moon baby a dragon?
Because dragons are awesome.
Dragons are awesome.
Why was the new moon egg bigger than the moon baby? And how did the moon baby lay an egg bigger than itself?
How did the moon egg baby get there in the first place? Who laid the moon egg baby?
I don't know. Maybe it was the Slitheen.
The poot aliens did not make a dragon.
All right, I don't think I can talk about this episode anymore.
I don't think I can either. I think I'm done.
All right, so Mummy on the Orient Express, in which I was surprised to see Clara because her happy-go-lucky romp with the doctor on the train in space negates her entire anger fit at him from the previous episode.
It really messed with the development of her character, I have to say. And maybe, like, at the end of the last episode where Danny said, you know, when you're calm, tell me that this is the end. And I don't know if you guys have ever broken up with anybody, but usually after you say, this is it, this is the end, you don't really want to go on a one last date with that person. Take out of your head that, no flirty. No. This is a relationship where even, you know, with friends, with family.
It's not like the Amy and Rory situation where they were like, this isn't working for us anymore. We kind of want to stop or slow down or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then, like, if it's something like that, I can understand, like, okay, one last trip, a final goodbye. No, she is angry at him.
Yeah.
This was like, let's call it a breakup, out of rage and anger.
Mm-hmm.
At least from the beginning of the episode, we get the impression that eventual breakup is going to stand. But for some reason, they're perfectly happy to still go on this additional trip together. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Guys, it's called a breakup because it's broken. Okay, so this is my shallow opinion of the episode because I have them occasionally. I really liked Clara's hair in this episode.
My kind of shallow opinion is that I was kind of annoyed at her costume because it makes Donna's Unicorn and the Wasp costume less special. I'm not even kidding you. Like, that's what I was annoyed about when I saw her costume.
Why is it that whenever they go to a 1920s era sort of thing, why do they have to have this bangly, flapper-esque fringe sort of thing? Because there was some gorgeous fashion back in the 1920s.
Because it's like, awesome.
I like fringe as much as the next girl. It's fun to wear. It's fun to twirl in. However, Clara could just as easily pull off something just as beautiful and not gold. Why does everything have to be gold fringe?
Let's see. On the surface, I kind of like this episode. I was about to say very much like this episode, but I don't think I can make that strong of a statement about it.
Yeah, I liked this episode. I thought it was fun.
It gave me a feeling, I mean, it wasn't as good, but it felt like it was trying to be Midnight.
Yeah.
Because the doctor was kind of off on his own and the companion was kind of off on her own. Although in Midnight, we didn't really see Donna at all. But it's that sort of thing where Clara had her own problem she had to deal with and the doctor had his problem he was trying to figure out.
Maybe they put Clara on the train so that they could avoid comparisons to Midnight.
Maybe.
I'm not going to say for sure. I don't know.
I don't
live in Stephen Moffat's head.
Thank goodness. I still think it would have been better for Clara as a character to have not been on this trip.
I agree.
But yeah, maybe they didn't want people thinking they copied Midnight. I don't know. I generally liked it. I liked trying to figure out this mummy. Again, he was a soldier. I would really love to get this whole soldier business figured out and why that continues to be a recurring thing in this series.
It's like Amy's positive-negative pregnancy. It's just like, is she pregnant? Isn't she pregnant? What's going on? It's like the subplot mystery as opposed to the big-time mystery. And I'm tired of it.
Well, and really, I think, though, that the best part of this episode was that apparently the 12th Doctor carries around jelly babies in a cigarette case.
I agree. That was the best. Also, I really liked Perkins. I want him to come back. I would be pro-Perkins as a companion. But at the same time, I also like someone taking a stand and saying, no, this could really change a person and mess them up a lot. And I'm like, you're right. And Clara blew up at the Doctor in this episode, and he kind of made amends by having the mummy go after him instead of the bait he brought in.
I don't know. You could say, like, maybe there was never any intention that he would actually putting her in any danger, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. That whole thing, that bit where she's, this was bait and I'm mad at you, but I would never really, and then based on what he does after that, you get the impression that he was never actually intending for that person to be in danger. Felt very Ten and Donna to me.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, she would be upset with him about, like, you're being terrible. And then he'd be like, oh, but I'm not being terrible. You know?
Yeah.
So I was okay with that.
I do take issue with the so-called time travel addiction mentioned in this episode. Mm. You don't know if you're an addict until you've actually gotten off the thing. Really? That's a lie? That's a line in this episode? And Claire's just like lying, saying, Danny's totally fine with this. I'm going to keep traveling with you. Let's go!
Yeah, there is that, isn't there?
Look, I understand that there needs to be drama in a show, but didn't we just have the whole double life thing before?
I mean, that comes more into play, I think, in Flatline. But mm-hmm. She is lying. And the Doctor, this Doctor, even calls her out on the lying.
Yeah!
Which, like, you're really lying. But it's also this idea that she needs Danny's approval to do this that gets on my nerves. Because she doesn't. She's an adult. She can make her own decisions. And mm-hmm. if Danny has a problem with this, it's part of who she is, and they should figure it out. She shouldn't just be lying to him that, oh no, I'm not doing it anymore, and then keep doing it. That's not healthy for your relationship. But neither is the idea that you need to run everything, every decision you make, by your relatively recent significant other.
Yeah. Like, if it were your husband, I'd understand.
Right, they have made no commitment to, like, spend the rest of their lives together at this point.
Yeah, I mean,
they've been dating for how long?
I don't even know what the timeline is on this show anymore.
Neither do I.
Apparently it's been long enough for her to use the L word.
Yeah.
I mean, she
that
already
happened
used
fast, it seems.
She used it in The Caretaker. Mm-hmm. That seemed really fast. So, I don't know how long they've been dating. I'm not aware of where we are in the timeline. I wish it was made a little more clear. And mind you, I have issues with that and writing my own stuff. The L word is a big deal. And I kind of need to know where they are in their relationship. Because if they are at the point where she's running stuff by him, are they hiding something from us? I don't know, but if they're not making it clear, then that shouldn't be a point in this story.
It seems like it doesn't quite make sense. Like, she says she loves him and then is lying about what she's doing.
That's a bad relationship, you guys. Yeah. if you're willing to lie instead of actually talk about what's going on, then you have a problem.
Yeah. Just figure it out.
If he loves you, he will deal with it. Or if she loves you. I don't know. I don't know who I'm talking to anymore, Clara. I don't really have that much to say about the mummy episode. I mean, it was, oh, wait, the Are You My Mummy callback line.
Yeah, I mean, we were all waiting for that.
I mean, it was too obvious, really. I don't know. There's just not much to say about this episode, really.
I mean, plot and monster-wise, I rather liked it.
It was a good it was a fine episode.
Yeah, it was a fine episode. It was fine.
It was a palate cleanser. That's what it needed to be.
Oh, wait. One more positive thing worth noting about Mummy on the Orient Express is the cover of that song.
I got so distracted during Don't Stop Me Now. I was like, there's dialogue, but it's Queen. I have to listen to Queen.
But it's amazing. I need this. Yeah.
It's amazing. And I realize that there's exposition happening here, but I really need to listen to this song.
That was really excellent.
That should have just been a montage. There should not have been any word. No words happening. It should have just been a montage with that gorgeous cover.
I do believe, though, that you can hear just the cover without the dialogue over top somewhere on YouTube. And I will put it in the show notes because I just found it.
Yay.
So flatline. There was that whole relationship thing we already talked about.
Yes. Like, to me, the idea was really original of the monsters basically messing with dimensions. Like, that opening scene was awesome. And I also really liked how the policewoman, basically all that was left was this mural of her nervous system on the wall. It was just so cool and so creepy.
Yeah, I liked this monster, villain, whatever you want to call it, quite a bit. I liked that they were trying to study humans.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that for me, the idea of them, or of a two-dimensional universe, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
is not all that original. But it's like a very specialized thing. So there is, I don't even know how to describe it. There is a novella, I guess, from 1884. Again, why am I talking about this? Called Flatland. And pretty much if you've studied math, that would be the only reason you know about this novella. But it's basically, you know, the world in two dimensions. And it is, how do I even describe it? It's a satire, which is really about like the English class system,
mm-hmm.
but it uses a lot of geometry and mathematics. And having read that and being interested in Flatland is really the only reason why I was like, oh, okay, I get this. And I got it like right away. And I also had a few math issues with the episode in that sense, because, you know, if they're two-dimensional, truly two-dimensional, how would they go up a wall? Because they would have no concept of up.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So that sort of thing. But basically, if my point in this thing that doesn't make a whole lot of sense is that if you enjoyed this monster, you might be interested in reading Flatland. And the author of that is Edwin Abbott.
I just added it to my Goodreads.
Yay. It's really short.
Good. I have a lot to read.
And there was a sequel, I guess you can call it a sequel, written somewhat recently called Flatterland by Ian Stewart. And it just goes further into it. And Ian Stewart's a mathematician as well. He's kind of brilliant. I'm going to stop talking about nerdy math things now.
It's okay. I like it when you talk about nerdy math things, even when I don't understand it. I appreciate science and math. I just don't understand a lick of it.
So, two-dimensional villain. Yay!
Yay! I also really liked Tiny TARDIS.
Yeah, that was funny.
That was funny. And now I can easily cosplay as Clara if I want to, because I'm my little TARDIS cookie jar. And I could just carry it around in a purse.
Carry it around in a purse.
Wearing like a plaid checkered shirt.
I also enjoyed Adam's Family TARDIS.
Me too. I'm so glad they made that reference. Also, the Peter Capaldi dance right after.
Yeah.
I like it when he can be goofy.
But you know what? Oh, there are a couple things at the end of this episode. The speech that Peter Capaldi gives to what he has dubbed the Boneless, which is kind of a not awesome name, in my opinion, is like, it's basically the same speech that Matt Smith gives to the eye thing.
To, over and over again. It's the same speech Matt Smith gives over and over again. Yes, I get it. You've written that. And thank you for saying that this land is protected, even though for the past couple of episodes, you haven't really given a shit about the Earth. But whatever.
Right? Well, he says, what he actually says is this plane is protected, which is interesting because, like, in my mind, I'm going, oh, so, like, the Z-axis is what's protected? That's the plane that's protected, Doctor? Whatever.
Yeah, you know how to use a thesaurus. I'm so proud.
Yeah, and then we are jolted back into another moral dilemma when the Doctor tells Clara that goodness had nothing to do with it. You were an excellent doctor, but goodness had nothing to do with it. And then we see Missy again.
Look, I feel so bad. I feel so bad because that actress is doing her job. Yeah. And, you know, when you get a big part as an actress and you get lines, that's really exciting. But it makes me so sad for her that every time she's written into a script, I groan. And I can't help it because that is my immediate reaction whenever I see her, because she is being overplayed. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing where she's like, oh, Clara, I've chosen well. It's like, so Irene Adler, she looks just like Irene Adler, which we've talked about in a previous episode. But, remember back in the day when dramatic irony didn't have to be used in each and every season arc, where the people got to actually interact with the threat that's been hinted at?
I don't even know what to call it. It's just like a little tag in every episode, but not or almost every episode, that doesn't actually tell you anything and is just at this point annoying.
They're being purposely obscure, mm-hmm. and it doesn't serve the story in any way.
All it's doing, at least from anyone I've talked to about it, is making people mad.
Yep. I don't know. I really liked this episode. I think I prefer this episode over Mummy on the Orient Express. And mind you, there were problems in it, but overall I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So really, it's a horrible feeling that, like, I actually liked 2 out of 3 of these episodes pretty much. Mm-hmm. And then, but Kill the Moon has me so still, 3 weeks later, so annoyed and frustrated that I'm feeling down as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't think it was an episode that was handled very well, because I think you could have an episode on that topic and it could be amazing, but it just wasn't handled well.
I don't think I have anything more to add on this. Do you?
I don't, but we did get an email from Reggie.
Yes, we did.
So Reggie writes, "Hey Casey and Sue, wanted to add my 2 cents on this series of Doctor Who. First, I love Peter Capaldi as the Doctor. He reminds me in a lot of ways of the very first Doctor. I like that he can be a bit grumpy at times, and I find his curiosity refreshing. This Doctor seems unapologetic in his quest for knowledge. Coleman and Capaldi have great chemistry together, which is bittersweet because we are getting to know Clara right when she's about to leave. Spoilers? Question mark? These last 3 episodes of Doctor Who, Kill the Moon, Mummy on the Orient Express, and Flatline, are good examples of how I've felt about this whole series so far. They're full of great moments and ideas, but the story isn't always up to par. I feel like these episodes start really well, but then the ball gets dropped in the second half. Even with its problems, Kill the Moon is one of my favorite episodes of the Moffat era. Peter Capaldi, Jenna Coleman, and Hermione Norris really sold this episode. I only wish the writing was as good as their acting here. My favorite scene is the doctor's monologue where he tells Clara he never killed Hitler. This is your decision. Humanity's decision. Sometimes we forget the doctor is a Time Lord. He is a time traveler with certain responsibilities, and this was a great reminder. The moral conundrum that the Earth faces is why I love sci-fi. These are topics and problems that you don't see too often in other genres. The writers wrote a great conundrum where there was no right decision. When the Earth goes dark, the weight of that decision hits you like a ton of bricks. But then they throw it all away so there can be a happy ending. Clara stops the bomb, the baby hatches, somehow there is a new moon, and everything is okay because, you know, plot. That really disappointed me because I'm left wondering what was the point of any of that. It felt like lazy writing. Mummy on the Orient Express was an interesting episode, a mix between horror and detective story. There was too much time spent setting up the problem and the ending was a bit rushed. It seemed weird that in 1,000 years, no one accidentally thought to surrender. You'd think one person would say, "Don't kill me, I give up." But again, I love seeing the Doctor working things out in his own quirky way. Flatline was a fun episode. Tiny TARDIS, Dr. Clara, and an attack from the second dimension. I do like how they keep coming up with new threats. My only concern is that there seem to be a lot of bodies dropping this series. I know it has something to do with this dead subplot, and I do wish they'd get on with it. It's hard to care about that subplot when your main protagonists are unaware of it and we only get 2 minutes of it every other episode or so. All in all, I'm really enjoying this series. Capaldi could easily become my favorite Doctor. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on these latest episodes. Reggie.
Sadly, I think you're going to be disappointed with our reaction to Kill the Moon, but...
Sorry! But I'm glad you're with us on the whole Heaven subplot.
I think everyone's with us on that subplot.
We can all come together as a community and complain
once,
about the Heaven
once,
subplot.
Right? Oh, but yeah, the other thing is he mentioned that Clara is going to leave. I'm not sure that's been confirmed. I know it's rumored that Jenna was going to leave the show, I think in the Christmas special.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that's been confirmed.
I'm not sure that's been confirmed either, but I think she has said in an interview, "I don't want anyone to know when I'm going. I want it to be a surprise and a bit of a shock." And I'm kind of with her on that. You know, it's been a while since I've been surprised in a show, especially Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. I support her decision if she doesn't want to share when she wants to leave. And if that's in the Christmas episode, so be it. I hope it's appropriately heartbreaking.
Appropriately heartbreaking. So, anything else on these three?
No, not that I can think of. Although, these next three are the last three, aren't they?
Yes, they are. In the Forest of the Night by Frank Cottrell Boyce. And Dark Water and Death in Heaven, both by Stephen Moffat.
I am kind of sad that the series is suddenly coming to an end.
But you know what? The last three are all directed by women, even though there are still no women writers.
Yeah. Okay. So we should probably end this episode, right?
Yeah.
Next episode's going to be out in November-ish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that'll all be right. The last one for Series 8.
Yep.
Until Christmas, anyway.
Until Christmas. So, Moment of Who, listeners, if you have any ideas about what you would like us to do during the next hiatus, let us know on the Facebook page, in our email at More Girly Geeks.
As well as comments about any episode in Series 8, anything that we've already talked about or that we will be talking about in the next episode. And I promise to remember that our email account exists.
So, this is Casey.
This is Sue.
And this has been your Moment of Who.
Whoa.
Oh, Katie.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-4335. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
That is not how it works.
You'll curse up a storm, but you won't say fart.
Because poot is funnier.
Oh.
You change a letter and you almost get poop.